What is the bass doing? I was trying to pick the bass up in the song.
There's exactly what the guitar is doing. I think there's
it's
a
just
little
the
bit.
Little harmonic, the guitar, like a little like, no,
yeah.
meow.
Yeah. It's wait, we'll talk about the stupid song later.
Welcome to Know Your Rights, a music podcast from two guys who know just enough about songwriting to start a podcast about.
Follow Rob
and Colton
as each week we dive into a different band or songwriter and discuss what makes them great,
okay, or otherwise.
Music is law,
and we know our rights. You know what? Welcome!
Welcome, everybody.
Da, na, 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 na.
I love LA. man, I'm so sorry to anybody who doesn't like sports that listens to us.
Do we have any, have you ever seen any Toronto listeners on our podcast?
I think I may have seen Canada at one point. And you know what? You guys were, honestly, throughout the entire series, the better team.
Yeah,
but you just couldn't close it.
This is so hard for me because something that's like I identify as like a series character flaw is during the postseason. I shouldn't even be admitting this to like the listeners that we have, but when the Dodgers win in the postseason, one of my things I do is I love to listen to podcasts after a victory, never after a loss.
Of course.
Yeah. But I'll track down like at least one podcast per postseason series for the opposing team to like listen in after victories. To like,
I do the same shit.
That's got to be a thing, right? That's got to be.
What is the term for that?
There needs to be a term. If there isn't, there has to be a term.
I think there is an actual term for kind of, it's not trolling, but to where just.
Well, yeah, because you're not like commenting and like, I don't anyway.
But it's listening to them suffer.
Like, it's, man, I'm telling you, like, I want to find a better way to put it. Like, I want to put it in a better way that, but it literally is that.
when we beat the Phillies in the postseason, I tried going over and like, I have a iHeartRadio on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, all right, I want to listen to these fans just heartbroken and just belting out. And I was like, oh shit, the Eagles are playing right now. Damn it.
Oh, they're all so happy. No, here's the thing, though, is sometimes, like, okay, during the Phillies series, I found that Locked On Phillies, like, I think it was, or, no, the Phillies show. It was, like, the three, like, former sports reporters. They're great. Like, every now and then, I find a group where I'm like, well, like, when the Dodgers played the Mets last offseason, and this is, like, a phenomenon that I think is happening, where there's this podcast with these two women. They're sports reporters for somewhere. They're called Why Am I a Mets Fan? It's a very good podcast. By the way, everyone,
that's a good name for a podcast.
It's a great one, and they are very good. And it's funny because they've even recognized they have so many new listeners because the Dodger fans just like all came to hate listen, and they're like, oh, wait, actually, this is good. But that's exactly what I did, and I have been doing all this morning, and my wife is worried about me. She's like, this is not good behavior.
I don't know if it's healthy or if it's not. I just don't care.
Sure.
I was the amount of happiness I had yesterday and honestly the day before Halloween, by the way. I hope everybody had a good Halloween.
Should we take two steps back from this? Two things. One, yes, you know the name of the podcast and Know Your Rights. Yes, we are talking, and also, honestly, I don't remember why, but we are talking about Linkin Park's in the end. But also, everyone, if you're a Linkin, we just started to talk like we're just two buddies hanging out. If you're a Linkin Park fan, one, please turn off this podcast only because I don't think you're going to like how this goes.
There's going to be some dark avenues.
But also, the LA Dodgers just won the World Series, and we're very excited.
And honestly, they won. That's one of the best World Series I've ever watched.
It's one of the best World Series I was ever aware was happening while I was watching a show to not stress myself out.
Colton stuck to his guns to where it's just you'll check the score. I watched, man. I watched, and I need to see a cardiologist as soon as possible.
And only because I've gotten comments from like one of my students who's a Dodger fan. She's a very good student, but she was like,
"Of course,
Dr.
She's a Dodger
Dr. Saylor, are you watching the World Series?" And I was honest. I went, "Not really." I was like, I've been watching little bits, but I can't. I just can't. And like, I'm for the record, everyone, I'm like a 162er. Like, I have the subscription.
Yes, you are.
I watch every game if I can, and I watch like repeats sometimes. And I cannot do postseason. This is a podcast that we've talked about this literally last year when we did our, which is crazy.
When the Dodgers won
our first song spotlight.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
Defines Brothers Blood.
That's right. That's right. Amazing. And we ended off talking a lot of Dodgers won the World Series. And that's
exactly.
If this is the 1 year anniversary, guess what? Yeah. We're going to do it again.
She was wondering why I didn't. And I was like, I just can't. That's poison that I just can't let into my body. It is. I'm watching a replay of it today. Like before, the reason I was a little late to our podcast is I was in bed. My wife was napping and I was watching the ninth inning, the bottom of the ninth, where like that fly ball that Andy Pahez has like decks out Kike for.
It's unbelievable. I think Kike would have gotten it, by the way.
His body was like 180 to the batter. I don't know.
It was contorted, but I've seen the little side shot where Pahez obviously is tackling him for the ball.
Mm-hmm.
But it looked like his glove was shaped up. And also, Kike Hernandez, kind of the Dodgers' Mr. October. So
I mean, he has one of those great, like, I don't know how you're able to work out this deal, but any team that knows they're going to be in the postseason. Like, if I were him, if I don't know, does he have a, was it a 1 year contract with the Dodgers that he signed? I didn't check.
I'm not sure.
If I were him, I wouldn't even worry. I mean, get a contract and then like get injured, quote unquote, just hang out,
wait until the fall.
Yeah. And if I were the teams, put him in bubble wrap because he's not going to give you anything in the regular season. But
I mean, he batted like 260. That means he got,
I don't think he batted 260.
I don't think
he
batted 260 either. I'm just giving him so many flowers. Flowers.
But and here's the thing: in the regular season, I don't think any Dodger fan was upset at that because we knew, and he's a gamer, man.
Can we just say, Game 5 ends?
Yeah.
What did you think? Because I'll tell you what I thought.
I was prepared to. I was like, well, that's it. They lose two home games like in a row. They're down 3-2. I would talk to like my wife and other people and say, you know what? They've won two games in a row. And I kept doing the logic in my brain where it's like, the bats are cold. The pitching's not great. I'm like, but Yamamoto, it's impossible to not believe in Yamamoto. And the Blue Jays bats can go cold. And that's kind of what happened.
It's what kind of, well, they didn't go cold. They ran into somebody way better than their bats.
That's
Yamamoto that's just crushed it. And to go to our culture Robuses, both of us got it wrong.
Yeah. What did I say? Dodgers in five?
You said in six. I said in five. Mm-hmm. And there was this really stupid part in the back of my brain that when we lost to where I was like, oh, they could win in game six. I was like, don't do it. Take it to a seven. I don't want Colton to be right this year again.
I mean, the instant flashback is 2017 game seven. I go to my parents' trailer to watch game seven foolishly. Like it's the first World Series game seven I've ever cared about. And I think if you're a Dodger fan, you know what inning one.
It was over.
George Springer, for the record, is in that game. Go figure.
And it's funny you say that because the way that this game seven went, when George Springer came up to bat, all I kept saying was, I'm okay with us losing. Do not let this guy beat us.
I know.
Yep. Like, that's like we've already given him a hell of a game seven. It's perfectly fine. Just do not let George Springer get a walk-off home run right now.
Yeah.
And he didn't. And then everything just.
Literally, everything you would want to happen happened in a way that is like. Weirdly, like I think most Dodger fans, I think we're kind of looking over our shoulder, like there's some kind of weird wish fulfillment thing, like a monkey's paw situation where I'm waiting for some. What am I doing this?
I like the hand gesture.
Yeah, it's the monkey's paw, right? The finger curls, but It's like Kershaw gets his moment. He gets a single pitch, like gets him out of late inning situation.
At that point in time, hands down the most intense moment of the series.
And one that I saw after, and it was great.
Watching it live was fucking terrifying, because I'm going like, this is it for Kershaw.
I have seen enough Clayton Kershaw postseason innings live and seen them go poorly, where I still remember it was always the sixth inning. The sixth inning is...
I thought it was like, the seventh, but whatever. It doesn't matter.
It was the sixth for a while. Oh, no, like the Cardinals, the game six in Chicago, which I wrote Matt, a song
whatever of. His fucking name is.
Oh, man. Chapman?
Yeah, sure.
The guy without... He doesn't wear gloves.
I hate
baseball players that don't wear gloves. I'm always like, come on. Okay, cool. No, you think
I hope
it's
you
cool.
Get some really bad blisties.
No, man, but everyone got a moment. Like Miggy gets a moment, like two moments, like a great, like that double clutch scared the crap out of me. And again, in retrospect, like I'm watching the game this morning, I am stressed now from watching replays of the game, knowing beat by beat what happens.
Dude, I watched so many replays and I was still doing the fist pump. Like as if it just happened, even though when we won the World Series, again, the Dodgers won the World Series, everybody, back to back.
Repeat something. Yeah,
but I thought I would have been like respectful and quiet. No. I let out this guttural, just yes, fuck yes, went into the backyard and shouted into the world. It's kind of embarrassing, but it was the best feeling.
Yeah. Yesterday, time now feels like such a, and also because it's daylight savings time, so I am very,
which I fucking hate.
I'm
not a fan of this.
But I think it was Halloween night. We were over at Casey's aunt and uncle's house. We're hanging out, and they, like, I told her before, I was like, man, I hope they don't have a game on, because I'm going to be following it. I'm going to have her phone, but like I want to watch like a scary movie or something. I have my pumpkin beer. And of course, because they're rooting for the Dodgers, they got it on. But then it's time to eat dinner, and I was like, "Oh, guys, I guess we go eat dinner now." And my wife's uncle went, "Don't worry, Colton. We got a TV right at the table. We'll have it on. We can watch it." And I'm just eating my spaghetti, just eyes down. Like this is in the most stressful parts.
Yeah, like really breaking down the shades of red in the spaghetti.
But when the double play happens, I'm in another room. I come back in. When I hear the double play happening, and I go at a high five, but I can't help it. I'm a high fiver. Games, I high five strangers. And I definitely did like a barely poorly aimed high five with my wife's uncle. It's terrible.
So you're talking about the Kike Hernandez double play to end game six?
Yes. Beautiful.
Yeah. I was there watching with Voldemort, and the high five he and I gave, I was like, we might have just broken each other's hands.
Are you going to do a Cody Bellinger? Yeah. Who is it? Cody Bellinger and
Cody Bell. I don't remember the other guy, but yeah, when he dislocated his shoulder.
God damn.
Yeah, but man, that it was. I mean, Game Six was a great game.
Oh my God! I mean, and everyone was saying, "Well, that's it, Yamamoto. If they win, he's got the MVP." Two innings or two games, two victories, and then Yamamoto went, "Hold my beer," in classic fashion. Hold my pumpkin beer. Perhaps.
Pumpkin beer. All right. Yeah. See, I'm going Pacifico.
This is still a day.
Dodger. I'm still in celebration mode. And to be fair, I celebrated so hard on Halloween that I kind of napped through the first four innings of the Dodgers game seven.
That's okay, because those were the worst parts. I watched up until the third inning. And when Shohei gives up the three run, and I was like, why is he starting that third inning? Dave Roberts, I have always been a Dave Roberts guy. Like, I've never understood the, like, weird Dave Roberts conspiracy that he's a bad manager when they continue to...
He's
crazy.
A clear-cut Hall of Famer. But, yes, it's because there are certain jobs in sports that you win or you get fired. And he was starting to teeter there.
Yeah, well, and I do think... Top of the third, knowing what the second was like, because I was watching up until that point. And I was like, I think Shohei has done his opener job. It's all good. And when he gives up that home run to, was it Bo Bichette?
Yeah. After intentionally walking I'll give flowers. Freaking Vlad Jr. Shit.
And how do you not like Vlad Jr.? He is such a like gamer.
He's a gamer. Yep.
And he's cool. And I think literally George Springer is never going to be okay in my book.
That was the only person that I disliked on the entire team.
Yeah, it really is. And you've already said it. It's funny because a like Toronto Blue Jays sports analyst like actually said he was like that the Blue Jays were the better team, and mm-hmm. everyone's kind of dragging him on the internet. And I'm like, I think most Dodger fans kind of agree.
Yeah.
Like they even in that game, they were more competitive.
Dude, I shouldn't say this, but I was kind of preparing myself.
Oh, I should. Since game five, I was preparing myself.
I was ready to open up this podcast with, I don't want to do this song because of what the lyrics say. I tried so hard and got so far, and in the end, it doesn't even matter.
You know what? This is a good twofer. If you're a Blue Jays fan and a Linkin Park fan, stick around because this is...
We hate both of you.
Is this like the reverse of us listening to a Blue Jays podcast?
I'm
gonna hate listen to a Dodger fans music podcast. That's what I'm gonna do.
I don't know if there's too many Dodgers fans music podcasts out there, so we have
a niche, man. We're
the mold for this. Yeah.
We're riding it, but no, I was at no point in that entire series, minus when Yamamoto was pitching, did I feel like the Dodgers were in control. And the only reason I felt like they were in control was because the starting pitching was on lockdown. The offense never actually came together.
No, it didn't. And honestly, when I was editing the episode that is out now, everybody, I'm sorry, it's not out.
Happy Halloween.
Yeah, it wasn't out on Halloween, but that's due to a lot of World Series related things.
Well, and also, it was Nightmare Before Christmas, which I think we even go to bat during that episode. Is it a Halloween?
It's right in between.
And so Monster Mash got some hits on Halloween. I was excited to see that.
Yes. But what was I saying?
Oh my God, this is bad. We were talking about the first few innings. Oh, like the Blue Jays being the better team. Hits Yamamoto being competitive, the only one that felt competitive.
Go Dodgers.
The Dodgers offense not being super great.
Oh, I was going into our cultural opposites.
Yeah.
To where you called it, to where you were like, I don't think the starting pitching is going to be the same as what we've seen throughout the postseason.
Yeah.
And while I was editing it down, I was like, damn it, Colton got a good Colter Robinson in there. That wasn't bad.
But that was when, even when I said it, I think I'm making this happen as I say it out loud. Like, this isn't good. But
I ended off getting one myself to where I said, Trinan should just not go on the mound at all. And when he went on the mound, he Trinan'd it. Yeah.
Instantly bad. Like, it's, I don't know what was his deal this season. Like, I'm like, his, is it spin rate? Is it something? Like, I don't know enough about that to know what the, like, because when I've seen him pitch when he's like competitive, right? Yeah. And like one of the best relievers, like during the playoffs last year, it just feels like the ball's doing the same stuff, like from an outside non pitcher's perspective. But is it just like he's hanging them? Whereas before they were like going to the edge of the plate, I have no idea.
There's a little bit of hanging them. The velocity is a little down, but the spin rate is still the same. So the movement of the ball looks the same, but it's coming in a little bit slower and a little bit clearer. And on top of that, any opponent is going like, all right, out of this pitching staff, who do we want to face? It's going to be Trinan. It's
at this point, but
honestly, I think Trinan was our worst pitcher. It would be honestly, like, who would you choose, Trinan or Kershaw?
Oh, Kershaw. Yeah. I don't think this postseason, Kershaw.
I don't know if I would have felt good about that. When Yamamoto and Kershaw were warming up in the seventh or in the seventh game.
Ask me Yamamoto on no day's rest or a fully rested Kershaw. But over Trinan 100%.
Yeah. I was more nervous because I was like, are they going to bring in Kershaw? Kershaw's last moment on the Dodgers
cannot be this.
It cannot be giving up game seven.
But
oh, unbelievable. And then just we'll close this out, everybody, unless you got more to say, but we'll try to get to.
During our Linkin Park, if I think of something, I'm going to just press
just pause. Just say it.
On Linkin Park. But go ahead.
Miggy, Miguel Rojas, when he got the, I mean, don't get me wrong, we already had the Muncy home run, which was great. And also, I don't know if you noticed, it bounced off of the Made for October banner.
That was great.
Yeah. Where it's just like, okay, maybe we got something here. But when Rojas was up, all I kept thinking was, I was like, you got to get Ohtani up. You got to get Ohtani up. And then he hit a home run, and I was like, fuck it. All right. Like, unbelievable. And he's retiring. You know that?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, so that was his last at bat, and then also the next inning when he threw to home plate, which we'll see if that turns into the Blue Jays anthem for the rest of Blue Jays fandom, because I'm still not sure if that dude was out at home.
Oh, he definitely was. He definitely was. Are you worried about Will Smith's foot coming off?
Yeah, coming off. Did it come back on time?
He does.
I just don't think that they addressed it long enough. And I'm not going to lie, I was sitting there going, it can't end this way. We cannot end on a review in game 7. This is not how this can go down.
Did you have flashbacks like I did to game, what was it, game 5 of the Phillies NLDS? I was like, if you throw this away. And again, for me, this is in retrospect, but I still can't help because I know what's going to happen. I'm like, how is it that they get that play so bang, bang? But when it's slowed down, it is like a full step ahead. He gets in it, but
well, and then it's perfect because then the Dodgers get bases loaded the next inning, mm-hmm. and we get thrown out at home. To where I was just like, I don't know what's going to happen here. I'm telling you, I was watching in real time, and the nerves were so effing real. Like, you get emotional in those situations.
This is maybe a good opportunity, and this might be a way to close this. I'm not sure, but like when I talk to non-sports fans about mm-hmm. how I feel during specifically postseason, like I honestly, baseball is the only one I feel this way about. Like, cause it's the Dodgers are like,
yeah.
I was born into no other fandom except Dodgers. Yeah. And so I don't know how to explain. Cause like, I guess the idea is like, well, what's the worst that can happen when your team loses? And I'm like, it's weirdly, how do I explain when they've lost so many times, more times they've lost than won.
That is what right? being a sports fan is.
Your
team's going to lose more than it's going to win like that.
And I think weirdly, I'm not trying to like psychoanalyze myself too much, but I think when I'm like scrolling through like Toronto Blue Jays, like Reddit posts and things, it's almost like I need to face what I could have been like that, like weird reverse of myself.
Yeah.
I'm not explaining it though.
I know. I still want to remember the word I'm thinking of, to where it's like you're rooting against somebody. And there's a particular word that's just escaping me right now. But I will say that when you called me back last night,
yep,
that was when the beginning of, like, I cried. I did end off crying last night, everybody. That's how much it's what you said. You're born into this team. You share so many relationships.
Yeah.
You know, you and I got off the phone, and then I started thinking about, like, God, it's so cool that Colton and I talk as much as we do now. Even during the 2017 game 7, I think that was probably the first time that we even shot a text to each other mm-hmm. for like half a year. And so I was like, oh, that's beautiful. And then I started thinking, I'm like, why did Colton and I do this? And I'm like, oh, it's because we started this podcast after, you know, I lost my dad.
Yep.
And sure as shit, all of a sudden I'm thinking like, God, that would have been beautiful to share this moment with him.
Yeah.
But that's where the sports fandom, it kind of opened my eyes even more to, it's like, that's why I love this shit. That's why I love the Dodgers. That's why I love the Lakers. That's why I put myself through this.
No, it's, I mean, it's very true, right? And it's funny because even we talk about music, and like when we've gotten into like our holiday episodes, like Christmas and those things too, like there's something, what it always feels like is even when we're talking about bands that we've loved for a long time, it's never just the music. It's always like the moment and like people or connections that are tied with it. Yeah. Right. And it's very true. Like sports are, I guess people come different ways. Like people sometimes discover things, but when it's like it is for us, yeah, it's, you can't untangle it. Right. Yeah. And in a very beautiful way. I don't think you can untangle it.
Yeah. What it meant to me will eventually be a memory of a time.
Gun, man. All right, everyone. So here's the deal. We're going to take a break. And then when we get back, I have to actually piece this together with you because this is all like pre-World Series victory brain. Mm-hmm. I have no idea why we did this song. So let's figure that out when we get back from the break.
We're going to figure it out. Baseball, okay. And take us away.
If you're looking for fun events, awesome music, and enjoyable podcasts, then look no further. The Baseball and Entertainment family has you covered. With so many talented people in our community, it was only right that we not only bring you events, but all sorts of awesome entertainment. Follow Baseball on social media or join our Discord community to stay updated and engaged in everything. That is at Baseblown on social media and discord.gg/baseblown for our Discord. Baseball Entertainment, bringing you more than just base in your face.
Welcome to The Siren Songbook, a podcast where we discuss female artists, their music, their history, and the impact they've made on the music industry. Join us each month as we pick a new inspirational artist and celebrate exactly what it is that makes them so magical.
You can listen to new episodes of The Siren Songbook on Spotify every last Wednesday of the month. The Siren Songbook, a Baseball and Entertainment podcast.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back. The tone has shifted dramatically. So
yes.
Here's the thing. We plotted this out. We had a whole, and I think we've already shared this with listeners, where we have a holiday conundrum almost every year where we're trying to figure out. Halloween is a like, it's not like, you know, neither of us, I don't hate Christmas, you don't hate Halloween, but
we
have our spots. And
yes,
we have a two episode Halloween special this year, and we're likely going to have around that, right? A song spotlight and whatever that's going to be, right? For Christmas. I don't know. You're going to choose it. November is a weird month.
No, damn it. We're both choosing for Christmas. I'm choosing a song for you. You're
literally,
a song
I'm forgetting that again. And I'm
so, okay. But yes, so there's the in between Halloween.
A last minute Christmas shopping, everyone.
I like it. there's the in between Halloween and Christmas, which most people would say is Thanksgiving, or as I painfully say, daylight savings.
Daylight savings, by the way.
Huh?
Happy daylight savings, by the way.
No. I hate daylight. Well, you know, I guess the extra hour was great on my Sunday off.
Yeah.
but we wanted to choose something, because I think your question is, why the hell did we choose this?
Right. Yeah. Because we had sat down and we tried to plan out in like a way we never have. Right. Which I was very impressed by both of us. We have a Bright Eyes episode coming up that I'm very excited for. And we had a number of discussions around what would be a good dually chosen song spotlight. And I think this was likely my idea. Let's choose one we don't like as opposed to one
we decided to not be thankful.
That's right. Yeah. But I think it had shifted, right? Because initially it was a song we don't want to like, but we do, or one that we want to convince the other one to like. And we could not really decide on how that all would go. And all, like, in the end came out of that somehow. Was this because, and I'm saying this because I don't know who I was before preparing for this. Like, did I like in the end? Did I tell you I did?
And then I think our mentalities were like, no, we don't like this song. I think that was our initial jumping off point. But then once we got to the episode where we had to tell people what we're listening to next, that's where there was a small part of me that went like, I kind of like this song.
I think our like, I want to say bona fides. It's the opposite. What's the opposite of bona fides? Our like skeletons in the closet.
Yeah, sure.
I'm very open with my nu metal past. Like I am about as like typical like white suburban teenager, like bought the edited version of the Marshall Mathers LP, owned Significant Other, also edited from Walmart.
I love that you got the edited. See, I was going behind my parents' backs.
We only shopped at Walmart and they only sold the edited versions. I didn't know some of those songs had curses like they did, because they always had sound effects, right? All the Kid Rock CDs I had. Exactly. Were those not the lyrics? Wait, this is serious. Is that not what happens?
No. There's a lot of what's the lyric for? If I say fuck two more times, that's 165 fucked ups and whatever. I can't remember how the lyric went.
That's no, and that one for sure. I had the edited version of that. So if I say,
if I say darn. No, but see, I had there was this warehouse around the corner And when I say warehouse, for all the youngsters listening right now, I'm not talking about an actual warehouse.
No, you're talking about off Avenue L, baby.
I'm talking about a warehouse music.
Mm-hmm. Right and off near Targets. I don't know what that is now. I think it's nothing. I think
No, it's a shoe store. I think it's WSS World Series Shoes. Let's go Dodgers. but anyway, yeah, it's off of K for anybody who wants
L,
to go.
Yeah, what am I saying L for? I'm it's been a
That's
while.
That's because everybody. The Blue Jays took an L.
Oh, this is great.
Man,
this
is, we're not stopping.
But so this is my whole setup for this is I did at a time. I love this was probably not my favorite, but I remember before it was a single and this is seventh grade. I was listening to Hybrid Theory all the time. My neighbor.
Wait, can I just really quick, like the warehouse that I was talking
about?
Oh
my God. Yeah.
Yeah. It was known amongst all the junior high students. They're going to let you buy the unedited version. You can
was
go.
Was there an age limit? Like, would they normally not let you if you were a certain age?
The Target that was near there. If I went and tried to buy an album that had the explicit content, mm-hmm. and they're like, you can't buy this. I was like, shit, I don't really want the edited version. And I found out from a friend who knew a friend, and it's like, oh, at Warehouse, they're going to let you just buy it. And so that was the spot to go on. I wish we would have been friends in junior high. I could have gotten you all of the fucks and shits.
When did I get a parental advisory of Marshall Mathers at one point? I might have. And it was like a big deal. Like it didn't go well. And I had no idea. I didn't even know that was a thing because we shopped at Walmart all the time. And I did not have, there was no other way for me to get music.
There were no Walmarts around the corner from
my people house, who so. Grow up in like cool cities like LA and that. This is what most of America has to deal with. Like
we're small town LA.
Yeah, man. I don't know what to but no, so I did at a time love this song. And I loved Hybrid Theory. When you're in seventh grade and you're
to be fair, uncultured. I actually still like songs from Hybrid Theory much more than this song.
I was actually gonna ask you about this because I don't know if I want to say that Hybrid Theory has aged well. I don't think any Linkin Park has really aged well, but there has to be tracks on that record. Like Paper Cut. Is it Paper? Like,
honestly, I don't remember the names of it. The best way I could do it is like,
I literally was going to watch the moon, sit to the sky in the dark night, guided from the light from the sun. People, I can't get this out of me. I want to not know these lyrics.
The lyrics aren't good, but that was one of the first guitar riffs I ever liked.
And that was the first single, I think, for that record. I want to say, maybe not.
I want to say it's like one of the first tracks. It's been so long.
It has been a long time. And it's crazy to think about. That. This was back when, like, a rock band mm-hmm. could actually be, like, one of the biggest bands in America. That's just not the musical landscape we're in anymore. I actually... Were they like the last like truly big rock band, like chart topping, as we want to call that?
I would still argue. I think we've discussed this on a previous episode. I would still argue that it's Cage the Elephant is the last chart topping truly rock band.
Did they get to? I mean, Hybrid Theory was crazy. Like,
The amount of people that were listening to it were discussing
and
it.
And like weeks at number one. And like, I'm thinking literally like sales. Cage the Elephant sold that much?
I know that they had big hits, but I would not give Cage the Elephant the same type of zeitgeist impact that Linkin Park has.
But they were, and I'm literally asking because I think at some point I just stopped paying attention for different reasons. But so I kind of missed the Cage the Elephant deal, other than there ain't no rest for the wicked, which
money don't grow on trees.
God, it's not even that song.
Not even close to their best song.
Okay, that makes me feel better.
Tell Me I'm Pretty is a great album that I think we'll eventually discuss.
Can't wait for that. No,
I think you would like that album.
But that's the thing, is like it is weird to think about how big of a band they were, and like when I listen to it now, I'm like, there's something so delightfully cheesy about Linkin Park as like a construct that it's hard to kind of deny them. And yet it's like the friend that you had when you were younger, like the friend that got me into Linkin Park, my neighbor, that you have good feelings about, but it's also like there's some embarrassment about just who you were at that time, I guess. It's weird.
Sure. It was really cool, actually. I watched this, I somewhat watched this documentary, like a YouTube piece together, almost like AI put together documentary on Linkin Park. And I was, once it ended, it just went into more YouTube, like kind of rabbit hole of documentaries like this. Mm-hmm. And I think it was Pantera, to where it was talking about Dimebag Darrell being a big Van Halen fan. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me of hearing during Fear Inoculum when Adam Jones was talking about how big a Van Halen fan he was. And I just go like, that doesn't sound right. But you know what? I think Linkin Park and Van Halen share a similar thing, to where they launch people at a younger age into like, okay, I really love music. And at some point you just run into things that are way bigger than your initial heroes. So I can give Linkin Park a lot of credit, where it's like, hey, you did push people in the right direction, but thank God something else was pulling on the other side.
That's a really excellent way to put it. And there is, only because I don't know if we're ever going to talk about Linkin Park, except for maybe in passing on this episode again. But I will say, even at the time, like when you're younger and like I'm thinking of music very superficially, it's also just like, who are these dudes? Like, what clothes are they wearing? Like, they're like trying to figure out who you are, and like you're looking to, like, if music is your thing, which it is, was for us, right? Like, of who course. Are people, like, who's my tribe, right? Where can I kind of flock to? And even when I was like listening to like Limp Bizkit and that, I was like, I'm not Limp Bizkit. Like, there's something about them that I'm not, right? Even though I was like listening to them, and like, I'm not Kid Rock. I'm like, I'm not going to be, and I'm definitely not like Eminem, right? Even like, these are like the kind of, like,
I very much so identified with Eminem.
The douchebag Mount Rushmore that I was like very much in sync with. But also, I'm kind of Blink-182. It's funny because I think Blink-182, it was like skater culture. Like, they wore clothes that I could buy. Like, I could go to like a Pacific Sunwear and buy clothes like Blink-182. Yeah. Like, Linkin Park was kind of that. Like, they were alternative in a not truly alternative way.
I think Mike Shinoda said something about tour. It's like, yes, they were in the same genre as Limp Bizkit, but Limp Bizkit had a lot more of like punch you in the face, like kind of goofy side to it, to where there is an introspective, while not the greatest execution of it, Linkin Park was going a lot more for the true emotions that us teenagers were feeling.
And honestly, this is, I'm going to lead with a positive. The only thing I think that comes across to me in this song that I'm like, okay, I hear sincerity in the songwriting. Yeah. And I don't think I've heard a Linkin Park song. And like, again, I haven't heard a lot of new, quote unquote, like whatever that means anymore. But
yeah,
I don't think of like this or, good Lord, what is that? Meteora, right? The second
Meteora.
One.
Yeah.
A song that I was like, this feels insincere. Like, and I guess I don't know even how to say that, like in like a very kind of cynical kind of fashion, like that doesn't feel like their approach. And
there's a little bit, I feel bad judging it this way, I just feel like they do a bad job of what they're trying to do, but the sincerity does come across. I don't think for a minute that those guys weren't passionate about what they were doing and were not trying to write the best song that they possibly could. I think they absolutely were doing that. I just, like I said, somebody pulled me from the other side and I went like, oh, Lincoln, you guys stay over there.
And there'll be a number, like we've talked about a number of those bands on this podcast already that I feel like have like kind of like, I don't want to be like, I'm kind of like a jerk when I say this, like righted my ship. But weirdly, probably the next guy we talk about is the biggest influence. But
yeah,
for a while, Linkin Park was, I was like, this is it. Like, this is the ideal. Like in seventh grade, I'm like, this is, they are. Yeah, like they're able to be aggressive, but I think there's not the kind of weird false bravado to their aggressiveness that it also is like, again, when I hear some like hardcore, right? Like real, like a Kate Breed or something, where it's like the kind of like working class hardcore. Sure. It's weird that it's the similar kind of approach. There's something very earnest about it, and it's aggressive, but it's also not, I guess the only word I can think of is like douchey, bro-y. There's something slightly more approachable to it. Like, it's a weird niche they fill.
there's a vulnerability within it.
Maybe that's
like,
it.
Yeah, it just it feels like they're coming from a place of sincerity. It's just, is Mike Shinoda a great lyricist? No.
So let's get, we're going to, in the end, bad song, like weird and huge, very popular. And at one point I was like, is this the best song I've ever heard? Man, well, it's hard, I mean, to listen to.
It was very difficult because, I mean, it starts off with that kind of like fart sounding drum thing. Yeah. And then the most boring piano line. I'm not even sure. I'm assuming that this is in D minor because I just sat down at the piano today. Mm-hmm. I was like, I bet that this is going to be based off of the one of a D minor, and then the five and the three. And it's just like, oh, yeah, it's 1-5-5-3-2-2-2-2-3-1-5. And those are the notes in the chord where it's just... Yeah. It was so obvious to me, and it was a quick sit down like, yep, of course that's what this is.
It feels like a kind of like, it's like almost like a bass root note deal that you would build other, like you could like layer other melodies on top of. It's the only thing. There's like, yeah, like I was asking you before, I was like, I'm like listening to it again because I'm trying to figure out like what, there's like eight guys on that tower in that music video. And I'm like, what are they all doing? Like,
by the way,
not enough music going on.
That fucking music video was painful to watch. I watched it for you, man. You asked me to watch it.
I told you, yeah.
I think this is why you and I, outside of us maybe not writing the perfect songs to become famous, I could not act in a music video. When you were talking about Blink-182, that's the closest that we can get to being in a music video. Because all I can think watching those guys, I'm like, how stupid did you feel, or did you think you were cool? Because it just looks so stupid, man.
It is. And again, there's, well, no, I think I've run out of my positivity. The piano that's going on is, and it's like, that's like the piano song. Like, this is the ballad, right? This is the album's, for lack of a better term, it is. I think there are two kinds of Linkin Park songs that I remember. And again, there's like, if you're a Linkin Park fan now, I'm sorry that you've gotten this far, but also
it's got to just be purely nostalgia.
Yeah. This is like the people who will hate Linkin Park are like, they're going to do it. This is like me. This is the hate watch or the hate listen. Maybe that's what it is, but
I'm okay with it.
There's the Mike Shinoda led, like, and we just talked about a track that is far more successful relative to this, right? Watch How the Moon, which I don't remember what that song is called. A Place for My Head.
Yeah, okay.
That, why do I know these things?
I'm glad you do. We gotta convey this somehow to the listeners.
Mike Shinoda raps the verses, Chester Bennington comes in and sings the hook, right? And
I wanna be
I wanna be with the energy, not with the enemy. A Place for, not the worst line ever. Like, there are some okay.
It's things. Classic Linkin Park, though.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. All right. Okay. I don't know. You're kind of getting towards a point, but it's just such obvious statements.
Yeah. I the best way to phrase, and I promise everyone, I know I do this a lot. Like, listening back to old episodes, I'm literally doing it now. Mm-hmm. I like my very circuitous way of getting to things. And I promise I am. I'm trying to get better, but. The best way to put Linkin Park lyrics and what happens with like Mike Shinoda and Chester when they're doing their lyrics is, I had at Hot Topic, I think my mom got this for me. I loved it. It was a all black notebook with black pages that said, "Quoth the Raven, nevermore." On the cover.
You brought this up before. Yes.
That's right. I had the gel pen and I wrote lyrics. And at the time I was writing those lyrics, I was listening to Linkin Park all the time, and I was writing rap verses and singing choruses. And I guarantee you, I was in seventh, eighth grade. I still remember some of those. They were great. And the band I wanted to start was called Shattered, which I still think is cool. And like, I wrote the logo for it in there. And it is the same level. Like, it's barely more advanced than that. And like the wordplay. Shinoda, it's hard to listen to him rap, man.
They're 10 years older than us. You know,
that's the thing. And we've talked about this with other bands too, like emo bands at the time, where I'm like, oh yeah, it turns out they were like 30 and they were writing the songs.
Yeah, where they were writing these dumb, because I did the same thing. Linkin Park inspired me in many ways to move forward in songwriting. Mm-hmm. I remember having having my tape recorder to where I would write lyrics and I would just sing into those old stereos that just had you could record the tape.
Oh, yeah.
Throw the tape in the cassette in there, yeah, and hit record. And I record. I'm sure if I thank God, I think that all of this stuff is burnt to the ground, has been crunched down in some junkyard. But I'm sure if I were to play it right now, it's equal to Linkin Park's bad lyrics. Probably better vocal melodies on Linkin Park's side.
Well, except for this song. But
well, Chester didn't like this song, so that's good.
See, and that's the thing. There's the Mike Shinoda led verses, and then there's the Chester verses. I don't like. And in my head, I'm like, which one is better? I do think Mike Shinoda songs edged him out because the Bennington. I think Crawling is the best on this record. I'm going only off of Hybrid Theory. It's okay. The best Chester led. I don't even think Mike Shinoda's on there, or does he like a bridge? I don't know.
Oh, it doesn't matter. Actually, I don't think he does anything on it. That's right. This is just Chester throughout it. But it's also, Chester just has choruses to her for the most part. Not, that's all he has. It's, it seems like in the hits, he does kind of the Adele thing. Where it's like, hold out a high note. Hold out a high note. Like, crawling in my skin, these wounds. And it's just like, all right, dude, there's not going to be any syllables within this.
Right.
And not going to be a little bit more to add more flavor to the lyrics. So Shinoda kind of gets the edge because he has to put lyrics in. But I mean,
and almost by comparison, he is not a good rapper. This is the first time I get to talk about rap on this podcast. I have not gotten to talk
That's
about
true. Yes.
And I love rap. And I feel like I don't know if fans are oh, is it because Colton's gone? They could talk about rap. I would love to throw down, but
that was not the approach.
I know it's, yeah. But I think by comparison, because you're right that Chester Bennington's his lyrics tend to be five mm-hmm. words, the verses, painfully in the verses, but Shinoda feels more complex. There's lyrical complexity just because he's playing more with syllables. But when I listen to this song, I'm like, I remember thinking there was more to this song, lyrically. There felt there was something he was doing that was, and I guess part of it's that's the closest I got to conscious rap, right? At the time, backpacker rap. Because it's oh, he's he's rapping about whatever the hell he's rapping about in this song.
A whole bunch of time's very involved with it, but the thing that really annoys me the most with Shinoda's rap on it is and it's already kind of corny because Chester, it starts with
one thing.
I don't know why. Leo and I talked about this when we were talking about Mos Def. When you say one thing, I'm looking for the second thing. There's this counting pattern to it, and I'm like, all right, if you guys are really trying to embrace yourself in hip hop, where are we going from here? Because it's one thing, I don't know why, it doesn't even matter how hard you try. Second thing, there's this counting factor that I'm like, he does. There's no one thing was just the first thought he had when he started writing the lyrics.
Right, and then it's which came there's a chicken or the egg, which thing came first? Did Chester I also, how did the song even come to be? Was it literally someone sat at the piano and did that? Because that'll make me sick.
It's got to be DJ Han.
It had to be the kind of, and yeah, did Chester have it starts with, I don't know.
According to what I read, Shinoda was the one who brought this to the band.
Gross. Okay.
I don't know what that means.
Here's the other thing I hate about it. Hip hop lyricism is so.
I'm sorry. I just like the way you phrase it. Here's another thing I hate about it.
I'm sorry. It's really great hip hop lyricists are just just watch it go. When I listen to Biggie Smalls, it is the perfect combination of everything. It is flow. It is lyricism. It's what we talk about in this podcast of conversational and yet exploring, not necessarily Biggie Smalls, but still exploring Church. Things, right? Church. Exploring a concept of something, even if it's mm-hmm. give me the loot, right? when he says stuff like, I don't know why, that means nothing to him. And this is, like, I hate empty calories in lyric writing. It's like when you know, it's just they need that line to set up the next line. But here's the worst part of this song. The next line is also empty. Every line is, it's like eating salad with nothing else. Just lettuce.
It's totally.
Doesn't
totally
even matter how hard you try. I'm still waiting for like my teeth to gnaw on something. And it says, keep that in mind. The this is what I think people tend to give Shinoda more credit, is where he says things like, I designed this rhyme to explain in due time. Not terrible.
That's a very good rap lyric. If you follow it up.
If you follow up and if it communicates anything, he's still setting up, like the whole song is him going, just wait, I got this. I'm going to explain this thing. And he never does anything.
No, he follows up. I wrote this rhyme to explain in due time. All I know is time is a valuable thing.
I hate that so much.
So bad.
He's like, one thing. I don't know why. And also I'm like, hey, you're telling us. Why do you mean you don't know?
But I designed this rhyme to explain in due time that all I know is time.
Time's valuable thing. like
fucking. Yeah, and then he just still, I guess the pendulum swings is, it's super cliche, but it does convey a certain emotion, you know, of just like, yes, the clock's ticking life away, but it's just, there's no build to anything real.
I think there is somewhere, there is a like old crusty notebook in like the back of Mike Shinoda's like shed somewhere with lyrics he wrote for this. I guarantee you, I don't know what feat of strength it took for him to not make an hourglass metaphor, but I know he had it somewhere. It's too much. Like something about sand. I'm even looking at it now. Is this like a Mandela effect? Did I forget? He mentioned he had it somewhere and he thought, no, guys, I'm not going to go that way. I'm not going to do. Are you looking for hourglass?
No, I'm literally just reading the lyrics.
Just look. I love looking at you too. And here's the other thing about it is he writes that verse and that is as about as empty of a verse, and then the second verse is just the first.
We're gonna start it the same way. We'll have a little bit, and I hate when he goes into the mocking me thing. Like that's where I go, like, what are we talking about now? Is this a relationship? Again, the World Series is the best way that I can take any meaning from this song.
The chorus does seem to, and I'm being very generous, it does seem to give it the, like, it is nailing down this concept of, I guess, some vibe of, like, wanting to make something work, and in the end, it doesn't work. And I do think there's a relationship vibe to that.
Yeah, there's a little bit of the nihilistic approach.
Right.
That this kind of nails it down. I will say, I always thought it was, I had too far to lose it all, because I thought the lyrics were so stupid that, of course, that's what he wrote. I had too far. But I had to fall.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I had to fall to lose it all. I still think it's, but you and I have talked about this. Fall is one of our least favorite lyrics to add into a song.
It's not going to end well, because also it doesn't make sense, because but is a contract. It's contrasting. There's something that meant to be like, however, right? Or yet.
Yeah.
But when he says, I had to fall to lose it all, but in the end, it doesn't even matter. Like, those things are connected. It should be coordinated. And it doesn't even matter because I lost it all. So it doesn't matter. It's not, I lost it all. But here's the good news.
Or it's, get rid of that fucking contraction. Just go with, in the end, it doesn't, like, leave out but, and, leave out and.
It's just, it's grammatically makes my head hurt. But no, there's, man, that's the thing. And like, I'm feel like I'm getting seasick listening to this. Cause like he starts again with the one thing, which again, I'm being generous. Maybe it's like that time is cyclical, or maybe Mike Shinoda went, no, the first three or four lines were so great. They gotta stay. They gotta come back. But the property part, did you think your CD was scratched? Property,
yeah. I think that was them having to do something in the studio to add something new to this and something interesting in it.
And then they do add the things aren't the way they were before, which again, like, it's all, man, these rhymes are Like, I can't remember your guys' discussion of like Mos Def and like his lyricism, but what for you, when you're listening to like hip hop specifically, like what are you looking for in lyricism? That, because I have always been of a mind that I kind of can't stand that like conscious hip hop movement. I find it like the whole idea of like there's a kind of form of unconscious, I don't know, but
I'm usually a lot more intrigued by somebody who's writing in specifically hip hop, but like when they're writing from a perspective of, you know, like trying to do social commentary, I'm usually much bigger on that. But it's really just like, give me creative wordplay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've said it before plenty of times listening to any rap songs. I'm still going to be drawn a lot more by the music, and some lyrics may wash over me, but it's those moments where you hear the, like, what's talking about Mos Def and Mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to that song and tell me that those lyrics aren't genius. And again, there's a lot of counting. So the one thing kind of bothers me with Linkin Park. But,
yeah, yeah.
But it's like, it's creatively put in place because lyrics are supposed to be carrying the day for a rap song.
The word I think of is like dexterity, right? Where there's a kind of like the ability to be able to thread a number of different syllables per line and have those like internal rhymes, which is like you said, like I designed this rhyme to explain in due time. It's the most basic version of that, but it is. I'm like, that's like lyrical dexterity that I can like get like vague senses of. But it's also,
so we both agree that's the best lyric in this song.
Yeah, it
even is. Though it doesn't follow up with good lyrics.
But literally think of any other rapper you respect, that's their worst line they've ever written.
I mean, yeah, if I heard Mos Def say, like, I designed this rhyme to explain in due time, sit back, everybody, and really listen to the lyrics, because he's going to say something that's profound and worth listening to.
One could only hope.
Now I just want to hear Mos Def do Mike Shinoda
part. And I still hate that when it comes to the bridge, they're still going, there's only one thing you should know. And it's just the same thing. They never tell you. People have given Meatloaf grief.
I would do anything for love.
Here's the thing, everybody. America, listen. The world. This is a global podcast. Listen. He tells you what that thing is.
He will never cheat
on you.
Yeah.
He will never go looking for love in a wrong place. That song's amazing. You're all soulless. Listen to that song. But they never tell you the thing. This song is about nothing.
Like I said, there's a little bit of the nihilistic approach. So maybe through some weird mental place that they were in, because I can only imagine the way that they talk to each other in the studio. It's just like, yeah, no, that was good.
L-I-M-P.
Exactly.
Like when you hear a band make a bad choice and see them get psyched about it, like getting to see a bad decision in real time, which I think we can both say we've done. Like
it's happened.
Yeah. We don't want to absolve ourselves from this, everybody. Like we have both together written.
Yeah.
Not great. I can't think of one now.
We've made mistakes that I've blocked out.
I'm afraid to name a song I think we've written that is terrible because I don't want to hurt your feelings, but it's like songs I could think of. But
okay. Yeah. Thanks for not hurting my feelings. It's kind of making me suspicious, but that's all right. Let's get back into this bridge.
I'll tell you off mic the song I don't like that we wrote.
Tell me on mic. You got to tell me on mic now.
I don't want to hurt people's feelings.
Hurt people's feelings.
But the thing is, I made my thoughts known about that in real time.
That's very true. So welcome back, everybody.
Here's what we've done, and I think we've done it very consciously. We have been so devoted to how lyrically the song fails and like the melody. We have not talked about the music, and I think not there.
What is his name? The guitar,
Brad Delson is the guitarist.
Okay. I remember back in the Guitar World days, the magazine, everybody, reading that and reading an article with him to where he was just like, I just feel like I don't want to try to oversaturate anything. I want to try to keep. And by the way, they all say words in their interviews. And I'm like, can you apply this to the lyrics? That's my last aspect of lyrics going on. Because I'm like, you guys are well spoken. Why can't you write good lyrics? But anyway, he was just talking.
Bankrupt. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But he was just talking about how he doesn't want to go over the top with the guitar. I'm like, the guitar is nothing.
Yeah. There's like a new metalness to this, but I think we're well on record. And I don't think this is like a like weird opinion. There are like good new metal guitarists for what mm-hmm. they do. Like, I know we both have talked about Wes Borland.
Wes Borland. I can't remember the guitarist from Papa Roach, but I always really liked him.
Yeah, and like it's very like they're painting with simple colors, but mm-hmm. they're doing it's riffage, right? But it's very basic riffage, but it's cool. There's no riffs. I guess the guitar thing in A Place for My Head is cool.
Like I learned that, but in this song, there's nothing, and that's fine. It really is fine during the verse when he does kind of the little like bang. I don't know
why. It just
there's no creativity to it. It's just kind of like, all right, yeah, we'll just piece it together. You two sing your hearts out, rap your heart out. And like the drums are fine. Actually, I think the drums are fine.
Yeah, there's nothing like I'm trying to think of what a good version of drums for that song would be. There just isn't. It's just he's meant to be. He's the drum machine. Like it's
so sad because I think I was thinking this earlier today. The best part of this song to me is the drum fills that go into the chorus, specifically that, mm-hmm. which is not a good thing. That is not a good thing for that to be the best parts of the song to me.
Yeah,
and then there's like one little bass fill during the bridge. And I'm like, okay, those are like the two moments where I hear
you. Obviously, I'm listening on the wrong speakers. I can't hear bass on this song.
Oh, during the break, I put my trust in you. During that moment, there is one little bass in between because it does start with just boom, boom, and boom, boom. Like it's just this one little walk, and I understand that they're trying to be minimalistic. With their approaches, I'm like, give me a little more. But it's again with a song like this and with the time frame that we're in,
we're
relying on Chester being the voice of a generation.
Well, and then here's where I think the logic is for this. Like, and you're talking about Brad Delson, right? His approach to the guitar for like I think this song and a lot of others, right? There's no one is doing anything minus. Maybe Rob Borden, right? He is the only one nuance to his, like, he's got the little ghost notes. It's nothing, but there's more dexterity, there's more like complexity to what's going on and like the rhythms there. But they're mainly relying on Mike Shinoda to fill this song up because all the other instruments have so much space. The piano is like really like heavy singular notes, the bass, the guitar. Everyone is like leaving space open for Shinoda to add like what the song needs, which is anything like filler complexity. Yeah. And that's the biggest error with the song to me is that is not enough because one, he's just not good enough of a lyricist, but he's just also there's like a good lyricist and a good rapper. And he's neither. Like Lil Wayne is a terrible lyricist. He's a good rapper. America needs
that's
to hear
bad.
He's a bad lyric. I don't know
he
why
he's a bad lyricist.
Decided to make the Carter 3.
But at the same time, like he's just freestyling, right? Like, isn't that what like Lil Wayne was saying to her? It's like, for the most part, I don't really write anything down. I just kind of go off of.
He's like genuinely, like when I listen to like Amelia again, I'm like, how did we make this big? But he knows what punchlines are. Like he's able to string things together to make you feel like you're, like, you're getting a little dopamine hit, right? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, you're a ghoul. What's a ghoul? There's nothing there. There's nothing.
Yeah, and that's the most disappointing thing, and I think that's why a lot of people ended off walking away from Linkin Park, even though some may have stayed. But, like, people who were like, okay, you catapulted me into really caring about music. In the long haul, you start realizing, and it's like, these guys were kind of figuring it out on the fly. And from they became famous with talent that wasn't worthy of their fame. Like, right. It's almost like they put in more of the street work than the, and I'm sure that they would hate, but I'm going to say it, Mike, way more than what you guys were doing in the studio. You did a lot more promoting than actually making something that was fucking good music.
Yeah.
You know, like, and like the drummer, he even said when he went into Meteora, he's like, well, I'm learning new things that I just like now I know how to do. Like, I can't remember what the quote was, but it was some, he was learning something on drums. I think it was Ghost Notes. It was something like that. Where it's just like, I'm starting to grow more as a drummer. And I'm like, and you're making millions of dollars.
That's, yeah. That's
to have producers make you sound fucking good.
There's a lot about, like, man, I'm thinking now I'm just like, I'm done with this song. And I'm thinking of like whatever, like Linkin Park frustrations I've had since then. Mm-hmm. It's just the fact that they don't need all the people they have. Whenever Mike Shinoda like is like playing guitar on like some of these like music videos, yeah. Like, what is he playing? He's not playing anything. The guitar, it's never anything.
It's just two guitars going dun dun.
It literally is, okay, we don't have anything for you to rap on here, so just do the power notes. I guarantee you the volume's not even up.
I've seen Serge Tankian when I think they covered Aerials, and it was Serge Tankian, and I'm pretty sure he was on a Squire guitar. I remember watching it, like, this is stupid, dude. Like, I get it. You want to hold a guitar on stage, but LeVar Ball, just stay in your lane on this one. It's just so weird.
But this is like a genuine question. What band are you aware of that you think actually justifies the inclusion of a DJ? I'm saying, like, we have to, I guess, make this new metal specific because what other band does this?
I was going to say Beastie Boys.
But it's also, it's the same way I feel about whenever a band has like a gimmick instrument that becomes a part. Like when Yellow Card showed up and they had a violinist,
mm-hmm.
and like literally all people wanted to talk about was they have a violinist. They're like, oh that's so God. Cool.
Yeah.
And I'm like, people,
I mean, it's borderline if you have a keyboardist. It's already turning into, it's like, this kind of a niche, I guess, but it's
you're the spare. Like, eventually, mm-hmm. you're not going to have a use anymore.
Yeah, I know, and it's tough because I'm going like, who are the other ones? So Incubus,
yeah,
Slipknot. Wait, does Slipknot have a DJ? I would assume
I'm asking you. That's it. They have a guy who plays a keg, so you got to tell me.
I have no idea. I'm just gonna.
Papa Roach have a DJ?
No.
Good for him.
They have DJ sounds, which I don't know if that's a good thing, but
DJ Lethal.
Limp Bizkit, yeah.
I guess, yeah.
The answer is no. There's never.
I know I've been on record that rap and rock they should never mix because they degrade both, and both I love a lot, and they make them both worse. Like, I'm trying to think now. I can ride my bike with no handlebars.
we're bringing this back again. When Leo and I talked about Mos Def, like when he went into the rock stuff, I was like, I don't like this. I'm not enjoying it. Yeah, I quit trying to blend it. I'm not going to tell Mos Def to stay in his lane.
Skindred, Nobody Gets Out Alive.
Oh man, that's also that's new metal mixing with fucking reggae.
The band's mentioned part of this episode is going to be an absolute disaster, and it's my fault. I'm like, now I'm just like, what bands do we know? Crazy Town.
All of the bands mentioned that we don't like, email us. WRITS.podcast@gmail.com.
Oh,
we will not respond.
Man. Can we take our break now? Do you have anything else to say?
I will say that for as mean as we have been talking about Linkin Park,
yeah,
I read earlier, I'm like, oh shit, that's really fucked up. Do you know NME?
NME, the music magazine. They're British magazine, right? Yeah, rock magazine. Yeah.
Their critique of this song is so good. It's another slab of gormless MTV rap rock from the bottom of the food chain.
Music criticism used to be mean, and like, I know I've talked about how angry I got reading, I think, the Pitchfork review of Features, and like how awfully written I thought it was. But I'll say this: I do appreciate back when you thought you could be able to do that. Like, there's no bite anymore to think about this stuff.
All I'll say is NME, thank you so much for introducing the term gormless to me.
That's great. That's good writing. I like that.
That was really good. But, and I honestly, Linkin Park, I don't think you guys deserve that much, because that was a better lyric than any lyric in this entire song. Where I think that's fucked up. Like, how, like,
I'm still thinking of bands with DJs. Did we ever play a show with a band with a DJ before? We have. We played a battle of the bands, and yeah. I think they won. I think we got second. Did we get second place?
We did get second place at a battle of the bands L-Ray Theater?
Nitty Factory.
I thought it was L-Ray Theater.
It was Nitty Factory.
I think the first one was L-Ray Theater, and then the second one.
I have no idea.
Because we participated in the same battle of the band.
I in my head, they're both, but it doesn't matter. B.B. King's. The one where you got the guy to give us the video for free. We had a.
I was running on some different.
And you played another show with another band that same night.
It really is such a cool story.
We used to lead interesting lives, everybody.
Everybody, it was really cool. We finished playing our show. I went walking down the little strip or whatever there, and there was a band playing. It was just two guys on acoustics. And there was a drum set behind them, and there was just this open window. And I walked past, and they finished singing, and I clapped after the song they did. They're like, "Oh, I didn't even realize anybody was out there." I was like, "Hey, you guys want a drummer?" "Yeah, sure." And I climbed through the window and played two songs with them. And I got offered, actually, to join another band from that.
Should have taken it, man.
We used to lead interesting
lives.
Oh, my God. Take us away, Bass Bomb.
DJ Brood is happy to bring you a proper session of music listening at the beginning of every week on Twitch. With rotating themes showcasing new music, hits of the past, and specific genres, there is most definitely something for everyone to enjoy. Tune in every Monday from 5 to 8 p.m. Pacific Time as he broadcasts nothing but musical goodness live from the comfort of his home to the comfort of yours. Bedroom Radio, where there are no Monday blues, just Monday vibes. What happens when you get a bunch of obsessive music lovers sitting around a table and talking about every aspect in music? You get the Untitled Mixtape. Join Dango, Lewis, and Lorenzo in this educational but enjoyable podcast that encourages everyone to branch out and expand what they listen to. From deep dives to letting you know what is a bop or flop, the Untitled Mixtape boys are sure to take care of your music needs every Wednesday on your favorite podcast platform. The Untitled Mixtape, a Bassblown Entertainment podcast.
Well, no, hey, everybody. all right, so ratings time.
Oh, my God. Out of 100?
Out of 100? You want me to go first?
Go ahead.
55.
Oh, wow. I feel bad now. I honestly don't know where to start. I'm going off of, like, quarters. I was going to say 25, and I feel okay about 25.
That's not terrible. I think 55, I don't know how many numbers get added in. Because of nostalgia factor and what I was saying before, the fact that they were kind of this kind of like help me along into better stuff.
35. You talked me up to 35. That feels nicer. You're right. I feel better about that than 25.
Well, it's like I remember at that point in time when I heard Linkin Park, I was very much so more of a pop songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I was still in that like 6th grade, 7th grade, closeted, I like NSYNC, I like Backstreet Boys. While also, I like Led Zeppelin, I like the Beatles. When it's like, this is what I want to do with this modern approach. And coming from a broken home, coming from certain things, mm-hmm. like all of a sudden this music really talked to me. And I enjoyed it then.
Yeah, and there is a level of like, if you are not like, how do I put this? Like, I know guys our age were like, their favorite band growing up was like Pavement. Like, you know, it's like people where I think they had more access to culture. Like in the, the 2000s, even like the internet was not a thing, people. Like in the 90s to early 2000s, you weren't discovering bands unless someone brought them to you. And there was only MTV and VH1. Those are the only real options available to you. Or if you lived in a town like LA or New York or big cities where mm-hmm. bands were doing those kinds of things. We lived in none of those things. And so
LA County, dude.
LA County, yeah. North, yeah, where's that, like north of LA? That's always what you say. And they go, oh, so like, you know, close to Dodger Stadium then. No.
Can I clarify? Do you like Pavement? I like Pavement.
Oh, I love Pavement. But okay. I mean, that's the thing, is like, I wasn't like a seventh grader going, oh, Pavement. Like,
oh, for sure.
I didn't even know they existed. Like, it's just, mm-hmm. I guess what I'm saying is there's a certain kind of upbringing that I think some people take for granted of like being near cultural centers where like, there's just no culture where we grew up. And so
it's actually funny you say that, because with Linkin Park, I can recall, I don't know if Linkin Park was specifically the band, but having conversations with somebody, like, I think that's how I got dragged out of the Linkin Park thing. Towards like, who's your favorite band? I'm like, oh, Linkin Park's brilliant. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're like, no, they're not. Check out X.
Right.
Check out whoever, you know.
And when Kim, my oldest sister, went to college, she brought home bands that, you know, like even like now it's like Flogging Molly. I'm like, I'd never heard of Flogging Molly. Like, there's
fucking
something
hate
that you, but that was like, there's a world of music that you don't know about. And all of a sudden it's like, who is this? Who is? And then I got into like buying magazines, like sure. Revolver. And I'm like, oh, who is this band? Like little bits here and there. And so Linkin yeah. Park, in a very serious way, it was emotive. Like early emo stuff when I wasn't even aware that was a thing, emotive in a way that I hadn't heard of before. Like we talked about it, right? There's the, yeah. the sincerity to it, and there is the more reflective nature of what they were trying to put across. I remember that because most of the bands I was listening to up until that point, I would say Korn was ish like this, but like Blink 182 was snotty with notes of things like Adam's Song and that, but it was never, they were not a band that I was like tapping into deep things about necessarily. And
yeah.
all these other bands were very like braggadocio, right? And that I think Linkin Park was a level of emotional like meditation that in seventh grade, that was the frequency I wasn't used to. And literally the only thing they did that was that, because I have shed everything else.
You know,
but that's not small.
No, it's not. It's major. It's they have their place in history, and Lord knows they're going to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame if they're not already there.
Oh my God, yeah. I mean, they're fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
They're fine.
But yeah, I think you'll appreciate this. I realized the band that usurped Linkin Park for me, and it's weird because I really wasn't like this diehard Linkin Park fan, but I was a fan of Linkin Park. They were one of those bands that was happening. But the band that I went like, oh, this is way better than Linkin Park. And I realized over this listening experience, and I'm like, oh, they're literally kind of Linkin Park 2.0, maybe 3.0. Mm-hmm. Tool.
See,
I know that sounds fucked up, but
no, it makes sense.
Yeah,
like
it's the drop D aspect of it all. Mm-hmm. The drums are a little more elaborate.
We've said Tool is new metal in a way I don't think a lot of their fans are ready to.
Yeah, but they are new metal. And honestly, everything they did outside of Fair Inoculum was better than Linkin Park.
I see. I went to pop punk right after this. My trajectory goes like new metal to pop punk to like when emo hits and Kim brings home Dashboard Confessional, I am on that track and I'm going there. But I mean, that's so like my next probably like eighth grade was Sum 41, Unwritten Law. Like,
sure. Yeah.
You know, so it's a newfound glory when Nikki got into Newfound Glory. I think very quickly, right? You kind of, is the thing, like, there are people where Linkin Park is a big part of their lives, and like they remember going to shows, right?
I think we've said this before, but
and they're still fans today.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, man, what is it that kept
you there?
I've bought Pokemon games recently, not the newest one, but I have bought like Scarlet, Pokemon Scarlet, whatever for the Switch. Mm-hmm. I purchased it and I played it. And is that it? Like, is that like my, like, but I'm not a Pokemon dude. I'm not like buying Pikachu shirts. And
I mean, I understand, cause I'm a Pokemon Go nerd, by the way, everybody. Level 55.
We're Pokemon positive on this podcast. Yeah. I think that's on the record.
Level 55. I just really want to throw that out there.
Yeah.
But I'm the same. Like, if somebody were to buy me something that says Pokemon on it, I'd be like, why did you get this for me?
And so, like, when someone is like Linkin, like Ride or Die, Linkin Park, and literally any band I liked in high school.
Yeah.
Minus, okay, now I'm thinking like two that I still like. So I don't know, but they're good. Like Jimmy World and Bright Eyes are still good.
Yeah, dude, I'm still pushing for a band that a lot of people don't want to talk about, but Brand New, I'm still going, like, they still make fucking great songs.
Those songs are still good. And it's hard, man. Like, I don't know how that works, except that I think for maybe some, like, I think for us, this sounds so, I think for some people, taking music listening as like more than just a hobby, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's baffling to think about for us, but there are people who are like, yeah, music's fine, right? And
I'll never understand it.
They're not treating music as like, I'm 37 years old, and I'm still like trying to push myself further into like, what other kinds of music do I want to listen to?
Yeah.
My 30s have been basically more of me exploring like non-lyrical music. Also, because it's the only music that doesn't annoy me anymore. But like jazz, right? And even like classical, like things where I'm like, I am like interested in, I'm still feel like I'm developing as a songwriter and a listener, like a appreciator of music.
Yeah. And it'll never change for me. I remember like I went through such a long drought of not having a new artist that I was a big fan of, mm-hmm. or felt like really motivated by. And it's weird that the band that pops in my head was Three. But I remember talking to my sister, and it's like I was listening to it on the drive out to Tehachapi or something like that.
Yeah.
And she was just like, "You look like you were having a good time there." I was like, I heard music that it's been a while since I've been this impassioned. And in the long haul, didn't hold up. It didn't stand.
Yeah.
But I still have those moments when I hear, we were talking about D'Angelo.
Yeah.
The first time I heard Black Messiah, which was well after it got released, I was just like, I fucking love hearing something new. It doesn't have to be new to everybody else, new to me. And having that moment, it'll never get old. It'll never get old hearing good.
It's a frequency, exactly. Like, I think the band, like probably the newest band I can think of, like younger musicians in that I like, the Beths, right? Where yes. I'm like,
wow. You seem to be like, a fan.
Stuff where you're right, you can still discover things, and it's not like these damn kids don't know. Like, it's just, it's also really cool to see younger bands do stuff that I think is cool.
Yeah.
Like, and like, I'm like, we're okay. The kids are okay. We are also kids, but we're also okay. Hip hop's in a worse place. I'm worried about hip hop, but that's for another episode.
Who we're going to talk about this next episode? I did listen to People's Key. Really good songs on that,
man. I'm excited to talk about People.
Track is unbelievable, and I promise I listened to the whole album, but that first track I was just like, holy shit, it's great. Until
that
it hits
the parrot line, I love.
Yeah.
I think we're already going to start talking about Bright Eyes. I think that is literally the album where I went, okay, the whole like opening with a like person talking thing, we can stop it now. Like, now we can stop.
Yeah. Who was that, by the way?
I remember it was like someone, I'm not completed all of my research yet for this episode, but I've done more than I have ever. I do know it was like a guitar tech or someone that was on their crew that like loved talking about like, some lizard people and like,
okay, yeah.
Like someone on their like touring crew. I'll confirm that.
Okay.
Also,
oh, absolutely.
Do you know, I'll give you a little preview of the research I'm doing. Do you know the couple that talks at the beginning of Lifted or the Stories in the Soil? Do you know who they were?
No.
Jenny Lewis and Blake Sinnott, allegedly.
Ooh.
Because they were all in Saddle Creek together.
Team Blake, everybody. Team Blake over here.
Thought you would like that. So, yeah, we are going to talk about Bright Eyes for our next episode, our final full people.
Six albums.
Six album extravaganza. We're going to do it right. Our final full discography, minus some crazy event in the future, but
let's not say full discography.
It's not full, but it's about as full as we can get.
It's six is a number.
Yeah. How many records did we do for Weezer episode one? Do you remember?
I think we did all of them.
Which is what, like 10?
It was like 14. I think it was 14. But we both agreed on that episode. Like, so that's the record. Checked out. We checked out. Like on the last one, just don't care. I listened to the first song from Black Album and went like, that was fine. Yeah. I'm done now.
Yeah, which people kept saying was the good one. I remember that. You sons of guns. So that'll be our final big one. But the episode after that, we are going to do... Well, you want to set this up for us? This is your Christmas ho-ho? It's already Christmas time.
Where Colton and I are going to give each other a gift.
This is nice.
I'm going to choose a song that I think Colton would really love to discuss that, honestly, you introduced to me. I'm going to have the better choice because Colton didn't think of this, and I did.
I have been... How about this, everyone? This is a very... Keep up with the metaphor, and I'll explain after.
Okay. Wait, I thought you were... Okay.
No, I'm sorry. You keep going with the song. I'm like getting ahead of myself. I'm already getting defensive. I'm sorry.
So I'm choosing a song that I think Colton would love to discuss. Colton's going to choose a song that he thinks I would love to discuss. And I guess I'll kick this off.
This is the first annual Know Your Rights gift exchange, Christmas gift exchange.
That's right.
I love it.
And my first hint is in the song title, we get a classic Halloween figure. A classic Halloween character, someone in that vein. So I'm giving Colton a...
In the song title, we get a classic Halloween figure. Okay.
Well, it's not just a figure. It is figures. Like, there's no one particular monster that is this. It's a very common monster in it.
Mm-hmm. Right till dawn, on my hands and knees.
That was going to be my vampires, next hit.
Baby.
My next hint was going to be Crawl Till Dawn.
Mountain Goats is it.
Yeah, I love that song, and you're the one who introduced me to that song, and I listen to that probably 3 or 4 times a year.
I'm liking the gift metaphor for this. I'll say this. This definitely feels like this is like your favorite song of the like you chose a band I would like. Mm-hmm. But a song that you love, which I appreciate.
Yeah, well,
you love that song.
You introduced me to the band via this song.
It sounds good.
Yeah,
it's a good song. I like that
so much faster than I thought you were going to pick it up.
I was cycling through and I was stuck on vampires, and I was like, "But we've already done the vampires will never kill you or get you."
No, damn that.
and I have
my I have hint. This. My hint was totally going to be singing the damn. Deal. And you
so
recited,
I feel a little okay now. I feel like I'm like more in control of this concept. Here's everybody what happened. I've been going to the mall for knowing this was coming up. I've been going to the mall metaphorically and shopping around trying to find the right store for Rob. And
wait, hold on. So metaphorically, didn't actually go to the mall.
No, this is the metaphor, right? You got
Thank
me
God.
A gift. And getting
Thank
you a
God
gift.
You got me really.
So
nervous.
I've been going to the mall like mentally, right, for the last basically month. And I'm like, okay, what's a store I can go into? And I found a store weeks ago, but I've never been inside the store. I know nothing about it other than I know you like the store.
Metaphor.
And I have not done anything since then. Today, I had to literally, at the beginning of this podcast, go into the store to find something I thought you would like. And I can't
literally.
Text you. I can't text you and go, hey, Rob, what do you like from this store? Because then you'll know what I'm getting you. So I have to just make a gut decision based off of when you like this band, when you were talking to me about this band, and what albums were out at the time that I think you would appreciate. So,
listener, I am just as lost. So let's
see. How about this? I think people that are in the metaphor, they get it. So we were just mentioning Yellow Card with the violinist. This band also has a string player. Not a violinist, though.
Murder by Death.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, okay.
All right, cool. That makes me feel good. You guessed mine really fast. I was able to guess it.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank
you. And then...
Oh, this is interesting. What song?
I don't know. So, okay, I have a song.
Oh,
and I literally, I'm just like going off a feel.
Okay.
Okay, the album is from a Texas Chainsaw quote. Texas Chainsaw Massacre quote. Who will survive and what will
and
be
what
left
will
of them?
Oh, yeah. What will be? Yeah.
Okay.
I love that album.
That crown don't make you a prince.
Good tune.
Okay.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Is that, but that's not your favorite off that record, is it?
No. Is my Mountain Goat song your favorite Mountain Goat song?
That's fair. Yeah. Okay. Was it Killbot 2000 though? Is that your favorite?
I love Killbot 2000. There are a few.
Okay.
I love that entire album. So, I mean, at some point, we're probably going to
gift exchange because it's like we both got each other's shirts and we're like, you like the shirt? I like the shirt. It's a good shirt. Okay. I don't know if you liked it.
Yeah. I'll wear it once a year.
Yeah. It's like, when I see you, I'll have it on. No, I. This was great. I like this. Yeah. So, everyone, Crown Will Make You a Prince by Murder by Death.
Great and song.
Damn These Vampires by the Mountain Goats.
Great song.
Actually, that's a solid lineup.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a really good time. And I cannot wait for my my Christmas hint for you come next episode.
Everyone. All right. So, everybody, enjoy listening to those songs. But also, if you haven't yet been diving into Bright Eyes, go for it, because also by the time this comes out, we will be 2 days away from doing it. I have to get back into it again.
Yeah. Go Dodgers.
Go
fucking
Dodgers.
I love LA.
Oh, man. All the like Canadians are super nice people. I'm like, that's ruined for me. They're dogs, man.
Dude, what did I tell you? The last four fucking Dodgers World Series, all against the AL East except for my Orioles. So I am just so happy that the Dodgers are 3 out of 4.
It's beautiful. Done.